transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
A lot happening on the show this week as we kick things off with Grammy Award-winning group, the Pointer Sisters. These ladies have been around for decades performing for crowds all over the world, and they're here to tell us about their incredible career. We're then joined by namology expert Sharonlyn Wyeth. She lets us know what our names really say about us. Patrick Charles is back talking about the music industry and if it's really important to have a CD in our hands, or are we okay with virtual albums? We then top things off with a remix from Zendaya, Replay.
Capture your need for sound.
We are so excited to welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show, the Pointer Sisters!
Yay!
I am great. I am so excited. This is such an honor to have you on the show. And I have to start off by asking, when you look back at your career, what one word would you use to describe it?
Probably amazing.
Amazing?
Yeah.
What would you say? You're the newbie on the team, right?
I'm the newbie on the team. Amazing is a good word.
Okay. That's amazing. Really. We're good with amazing?
Yeah. Exciting.
Exciting and wonderful. And it's like winning the lottery.
Now, I wanted to ask you as well. Obviously, a lot of your fans, and I've asked this of other groups too, such as Boyz II Men. I had the chance to speak to them. And I said, you know, everyone, you know, knows your big hits like Neutron Dance and, you know, I'm So Excited and Jump. Are those the songs that mean the most to you to perform, or is it other ones in your catalog that actually get you guys going more than the big numbers?
Right now, we're not performing a lot of the songs that I really, really love. You know, we've been doing the same show for quite a while. And we're talking about putting some new songs in because we have some great things that people haven't heard in a long time.
What would you say, Issa?
I think it would be great to add some new songs. You know, we've added me and my niece Sadako. She also alternates with me.
Okay.
And it would be great because we've added new people to have some new songs. But I'm a fan of the old favorites, and you know, because the audience wants to hear them, they get very excited, and that makes us excited.
That's what I wanted to ask you. What's it like when you are, you know, performing and you see people screaming the lyrics back at you? Like, what does that feel like after all these years?
It's wonderful because it makes our work so much easier. They can sing it.
And I wanted to ask you as well, I'm sure you perform at a bunch of gay pride parades or gay events. What does your gay following mean to you?
It means everything. They're wonderful. We love them to death, and they support us. They've been supporting us from day one, from San Francisco Opera House, you know.
And beyond.
And beyond, yeah. So it's been great. I mean, we love them, and, you know, it's...
I interviewed Cece Peniston. I'm sure you've heard of her before. And she actually said that she calls her gay following her best girlfriends. Would you say that's true?
Oh, yeah. Girlfriends and boyfriends.
Definitely. Girlfriends and boyfriends.
They're so much fun. The gay community is so much fun. They're always happy and lively and just out to have a really, really good time.
And when you're performing on stage, can you pick people out that are there, or is it like a big blur? Because I always wonder when you guys are up there, do you see people screaming like crazy and going, oh my God, it's me and it's you and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah.
We pick them out. We were just in Amsterdam. We were playing Paradiso and it was so wonderful. We sold it out. Every place in the balcony was full. But there was a guy standing there with a sign. He wanted Ruthie to sing, what was it, Automatic. And we had taken that out of the show, but we did it. We did it for him. That's because we saw him.
That's amazing. And what country, because you guys are all over the place, is there a country that you love performing in more? And what's it like when you're performing for your own, like, American fans?
I love performing in Europe. I really do. They seem to really know all about the music and the people that are playing on the records and all the information about
the history.
Everything.
They really, really investigate.
Yeah.
And dig. And
I love
Belgium.
Belgium is my favorite place because we have spent a lot of time there and we've made friends there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like going home almost. It's special to be there. And the audiences just give us an unsurmountable amount of love.
It's weird how the further away from home you are, it seems, the more they appreciate you, you know?
Yeah. Do you have that in Japan?
Yeah, in LA, in California, where we're from.
Right. Do you guys have lots of Japanese fans? I would imagine too, because they seem really like about American culture.
Oh, yeah. We've done fashion shows in Tokyo back in the day.
Television shows.
And TV, TV shows. And we had huge, big, big concerts over there. Mm-hmm. And they loved us with love. We haven't been there in quite a few years, though.
Yeah.
We need to get back to Japan.
You heard it here. We have actually a radio station that listens to our show overseas. So our Japanese fans listening right now. So they are in Tokyo. It's a radio station in Tokyo. Okay. So your Japanese fans are hearing all of this right
now. Hello, Japan.
Yes, hello, Tokyo. We love you.
I wanted to ask you, you spoke about your fans briefly for a moment. And have you become friends with any of them? Because I know, I was fortunate to interview Taylor Dane. And she said that she sort of has a few that she's met through social media that she sort of, I think one runs her, one runs her fan club or something.
We have a fan that runs our fan club as well, Paul. He's wonderful.
Yeah.
And also we met friends in Belgium, we was talking about how, and they came over and stayed at my house and we hung out, went to shopping in LA and they've come over several times to visit with me and they have a beautiful boutique in Antwerp and we drive them nuts when we're there. The first time we went, we bought the whole store out. So. And they're just, it's great to have people like that. You know, just last week I had lunch with some people that we had performed at their wedding. Yeah. And there was an auction for a celebrity auction for MS, and they were the highest bidders. And so it was really nice to just have a close up conversation and talk to them. Yeah, reconnecting with, I had forgotten about their wedding. They brought photos. of us performing at their wedding years ago. So, we do get a chance to meet some of our fans. We do, and we love them.
I have a lot of fan friends on my Facebook page.
Okay, good. That's awesome.
I do.
And I wanted to ask you, you brought up Facebook. Well, you must be addicted to Facebook. Is anyone addicted to social media? Like, are you tweeters?
I'm not a tweeter.
You're not a tweeter?
Not a tweeter.
That's interesting because we've done a study, or there was a study that came out in Canada, and they said that Americans are way more tweet heavy than we are. We're Facebookers up in Canada.
I like Facebook.
I have a Facebook page, but I never do nothing with it. I just look at it.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook.
You're all over it.
Several times a day.
Very
I'm
good.
All over it.
So there's no, because I wanted to ask you if social media played a part in your career, because I know so many fans now or acts now, like a Cece Peniston, she says that has really helped her to keep going and be in contact with her fans, but you guys don't feel the need to do that?
Well, we do, and like Issa does some, and Sadako does a lot.
Sadako's a tweeter. She's a tweeter.
Yeah, and our guy Paul, who works on our website, he does, he keeps us in touch with what's going on. I wish we did. Well, I don't know. I guess we have to hire somebody to start tweeting for us, huh?
I don't know.
It'll be the Pointer Sisters team, because everyone has a team. Janet Jackson has a team that tweets. You guys have a team. What's it like to be traveling all over the place still? Do you ever get tired of traveling? Are you still good?
Oh, yes.
Yes,
still
we
get
do.
Tired. You saw I was laying here when you came in.
I'd say the traveling is the most exhausting part
after
of the
job. 40 years, give me a break. You know, we don't do a whole lot of shows now. You know, we kind of pick and choose what we want to do.
Traveling isn't fun anymore.
No, okay.
It used to be fun. When we first started in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
We had literal parties on the plane. I mean, seriously. You know, you didn't. People that smoked could smoke. Right. People that drank could drink. Right. I mean, we've actually played music with big instruments on the plane, on the flight, in the aisle, and just Taj Mahal and just party. If you're running a little late, you run straight to the gate. No security, no nothing. If you want to bring 25,000 bags, bring them all. Nobody was charging you. You could bring all the bags you wanted.
Wow. Cases.
Yeah.
I can't believe we got those big cases on planes back in the day. And they would bribe the guys at the airport to get them on the plane.
And
even.
Now it's just, since 9/11, everything changed.
Right.
And it's just not fun anymore.
I want to ask you about that. We've just passed the anniversary of 9/11. Where were you guys when that went down?
I was in Toronto.
Where are you?
It
seems like we've been
Ruth,
in Canada.
We sure
even several times since then,
on 9/11.
On this celebration.
Yeah.
I was talking about that yesterday. I said, here we are in Canada again,
traveling.
And it's 9/11.
Were you there for a couple of days after it happened, or were you,
We couldn't get flights
out.
We ended up renting a car and driving back through Detroit.
Everything shut down that day.
What is it like for you as an American? Because obviously the funny thing was I was in Toronto at the time. I was working up there at the time. And I remember it was such a crazy feeling for me to just experience that, because none of us had ever been through something like that. Yeah. Did you feel the love from Canadians though? Because I feel
Of course. Yeah. We had to cancel our show
on
even.
Queen Street, and people were just standing in the street crying. And I thought, wow, this is not even America. And these people are really, really sad. You know,
yeah,
it was a horrible day.
Terrible, terrible day. And it's always interesting to hear where people were like in that moment. And no one ever forgets where they were. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about some of your accolades that you guys have had as a group. What's it like to be known as Grammy Award winners?
It's wonderful. It's simply wonderful. You know, and our first Grammy was for a country song that we wrote. And that really just blew my mind. You know, that, and then when Elvis recorded it, that blew my mind again. And we've been successful with our Grammys and songwriting, and I love it.
Where are the Grammys? Where are they hanging out?
Well, we each have our own. Mine's in my living room at home.
You know where yours is?
The house office.
Okay, very good. And which one means more to you? Is it the country one? Because that's sort of, I guess, not what people would expect from you, I guess.
It's to me because I wrote the song. Okay. And yeah, and it was our first.
Yeah.
And it was, you
we
know,
we were surprised because we were on the road. We didn't even know.
Yeah,
someone
we were
said,
so shocked.
You guys
shocked.
Just won a Grammy. Really?
What?
And you know. You got a Grammy?
I know.
And wait, we hadn't even been in the business that long.
I know, and we didn't even go to the Grammy Awards.
No.
We weren't even there. We were on the road, you know.
See,
but
Mom and June went and picked it up.
Right. We were on the road, and it was just amazing. I couldn't believe it. It was just unbelievable.
What's it like when you win something like that, though? Because especially like a Grammy, like that's basically the Oscars, obviously, of the musical world. So does it mean more? Because obviously I know you've won like, you know, American Music Awards and other awards. Is that the one that, or that genre, that one mean the most to you, that award?
Probably. I remember when we were at the Grammys, and every time I hear this song, Drive, by the Cars. Every time I hear that song, I think about that year that we won with Jump.
Jump, yeah.
Because I remember hearing them, you know, name the songs that were nominated, and I thought, oh, wow, that song, The Cars, and I love that song. Oh, my God, we don't stand a chance. And they said the Pointer Sisters, and I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe we won over them. So every time I hear that song, big old smile comes on my face.
And I have to ask you this, you know, you guys have been around, you obviously have your careers down, you know what you guys are about, you know what's going on. How do you feel about the younger acts that are out there now that I feel like it's like the fast food generation where they expect stuff? Like, I love Justin Bieber, but I feel like he expected to win a Grammy already. Like, he thought that Best New Artist last year was his. What do you say to like a Justin Bieber or like a Miley Cyrus with the twerking?
Oh, whoa.
Tell
whoa,
Miley whoa, Cyrus she needs to go to Atlanta and learn how to really twerk. But I mean, the awards now too, they're so generous with them. I mean, who gets 12 Grammys in one time? You know, come on. I mean, there's so many great artists out there. Yeah. And they deserve to spread it around a little bit, you know, but just to get one
12 gift, Grammys, and you've been in the business like that long.
Yeah, 3 minutes, you know, and it's like,
really?
I think it's really diminished the value of the awards, the way they're just throwing them all out to one person. And they don't even know. That's like they did with Lauryn Hill, and then come to find out she didn't even write the stuff. She didn't even produce the stuff, you know. It's just like, I don't know. I know I shouldn't have said her name, but I'm sorry.
She's in jail right now, so she probably won't hear this.
I just, though, when I found out that producers were suing because she was not honest with her, and then they gave her, what, 15 Grammys that year? I'm like, come on. You know, the industry is just kind of, I don't know what they're doing.
You said it good. Fast food.
It is fast food. Okay. I was just going to say, I think it's more about quantity than quality these days. And the younger generation, they don't even show homage and respect to the music that came before them. And that's really, really sickening. I mean, they need to know that they wouldn't even be doing what they're doing if it weren't for groups like the Pointer Sisters and Boyz II Men and, you know, several other groups that are out there. They don't give them any credit for that. And I think that they do expect what they haven't really earned yet.
Right.
You know, I think that they need to put in the work put in a little more work before they get those accolades.
And ladies, last question before I let you go. What message would you like to put out to your fans that are listening right now? Because we've got people in Canada, people in the States, and people over in Asia listening to this right now.
Oh, that we're still going on. Pointer Sisters are still here and happy, and we can't wait to see you.
Excellent. Thank you, ladies, so much for hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly. Hi, we're the Pointer Sisters, and we're hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show. Hi, Kelly.
Our next guest has developed the science behind nameology and what your name can say about you. Sharon Lynn Wyeth really began to hone her skills as a teacher, meeting with and connecting with many of her students. She further developed her theories and skills when she traveled the world developing the science behind names. Sharon, welcome back to The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly. It's great to be here.
So if we could talk a little bit about what nameology science is, because I'm sure you have your skeptics.
Yes, I have my skeptics, but not usually after I do their names. It is a study of the placement of the letters in the name and how that connects to certain personality traits. And it's happened because when I was in the classroom, I started seeing patterns. I am a math teacher, and so I see patterns in numbers. And so after a while of teaching so many kids, I started seeing patterns in the letters. And certain letter combinations give you certain personality traits, or those combinations seem to bring out certain things within a person. For an example, the people that have a T in their name at the beginning of their name like to be on top of everything. They like to do their very best. Or if they can't do their best, they'd rather not do anything at all. So you find that people with the name Tom or anything that starts with a T, those people are usually at the top of their game or at the very bottom because they won't try if they don't think they can be at the top.
Did this start sort of just sort of seeping into your consciousness? Like, I know that obviously there's a science behind it, but like you must have had to, like you said, start really noticing things.
Well, it started when I was doing a seating chart and my brain started telling me about the kids when I didn't know them. It was at the beginning of the year. So my curiosity was up and I said, okay, let me start writing down everything that I'm feeling about this name, even though I don't know the children, and let me see later on if it comes to pass and if it's true. And so when I realized that it was very accurate, then I wanted to make conscious what was unconscious. So then I spent a lot of time and I started by doing names of, there was such a plethora of Davids in my life that I wrote down a column for every David and said, what have I observed about this David? What about this one? What about that one? And then I said, okay, what's in common all the way through that has to sit in the name David? And then what's different that has to come from either the middle or the last name? And so I did that with enough names that I realized that the first name is the essence of who we are. The middle name is how we change or morph or act when we're under stress. And the last name represents our environment or our environmental influence. So we have both nature and nurture in our names.
What happens if you have, you know, someone who has like a two-part name? Like, for example, like we'll use me. My real name is Kelly Ann. That's the first name. But most of my friends and some of my family calls me Kelly, which is what I prefer. I actually cannot stand the Ann part. But like, for example, my dad and my mom call me that because that's what they named me. So, and I feel, it's funny because when my dad and my mom call me that, I don't really notice, and my brother sort of calls me it too. I don't really notice anymore, but I would notice it, let's say, if my friends were around as like a teenager because I couldn't stand being called Kellyanne. So I feel like a Kelly, but when I'm at home, I'm a Kellyanne.
So when your parents call you Kellyanne, they're asking you to be more specific, more detailed, have a better memory, be more serious about different things. And when you just go by Kelly, then you're being asked to be have more freedom and be more of who you're feeling like you are. You're more of a chameleon where you can get along with anybody that's around you. What happens is when somebody calls us any kind of a nickname or a whatever they choose to call us, if we respond to that name, we're saying it's okay to show that person the characteristics that's in that name. And when other people call us a different name, then they're saying it's okay to show us the characteristics that are just in this name.
I see. Because it's funny, too. Like, I often get Kel. Like, everyone, a lot of people, a lot of my friends call me Kel. I'll even sign emails that way, depending on, I guess, if I'm trying to be more like the buddy-buddy or if, like, I sort of want, I guess, more umph to it, I'll sign Kelly. I prefer Kelly. I kind of don't even notice anymore if I get called Kel, but it's like, it's weird. Cause I feel like a Kelly, that's what I prefer. But again, like I said, it's weird. And I know like I have other friends that have like sort of two part names or you even read it, you know, someone's name like Betty Sue or whatever. And like, to me, I think that's terrible. Like I like my first name. And so does that like make you act differently as well, depending on which name you're, I guess, acknowledging?
Yes, it does, because you're willing to show other people the qualities and characteristics that exist in the name that you're responding to. And then you hide, or they're more subtle, the qualities and characteristics that are part of your name that you're not being called.
Okay. And so when you were doing your research, did you sort of notice, like, again, I know you said with the Davids, like you sort of grabbed that commonality. Have you noticed ever though, let's say like a polar opposite with like a Sarah and then like another Sarah that spell it the same way, but are fairly polar opposites, or has there always been this commonality?
Well, it's kind of like you're going into your kitchen and you're going to cook. And the ingredients that exist in your kitchen, those are like the ones in your first name. And the recipes that you choose to make out of those ingredients, that's what your last name does. So yes, you can have Sarah's or David's or any name two people can have, and they seem like they're totally different people. It's because of the influence of the environment. It's because the recipes they're allowed to use are very different. It's that environmental influence. Because if you had a very loving home versus one that was very strict and almost abusive, of course you're going to react differently.
Now, if we talk about, you know, specific names, because I want our listeners to see you in action or hear you in action. One that sort of came to mind recently is, you know, everyone's sort of been royal baby crazy the last couple of months since the little fellow was born. First of all, I guess I should ask you just off the top, were you expecting his name to be George? Because I think a lot of people were. I really wasn't. I really didn't think they would go with George. So I kind of was surprised that, you know, he is now George Alexander Louis. And does the prince add an extra thing to him, too? Because I'm sure for a lot of times he will be known as Prince George.
Prince does. It's Prince is like saying I'm the Pied Piper and let people follow me. So it makes it easier for people to follow him when he's called Prince. It makes it easier for him to lead. But out of all the names they were considering, George was actually the best name. So I was very pleased when they called him George. This is going to be a person who is able to affect change in a way that has compassion and caring and intelligence behind it. He is going to be an agent for change. He's going to be very generous with his time. He's going to be very fair. It's a wonderful, wonderful name is what they've chosen for him. So I have high, high expectations for this boy.
And do you think because, you know, you can't really change George into anything except for calling him maybe Georgie if when he's little or whatever. And maybe he'll be called that later on by his immediate circle. I don't know. But that, you know, seems like a name that, you know, you can't really mess with. And it seems like it's a very, I guess, like, I don't know how to say this. Like, it just seems like it's a very, like, it's a weighted name. Just like sort of Prince William seems like that was a weighted name. Because, for example, his brother, you know, it goes by Harry, who's not even its real name. His real name is Henry, right? So it seems like he got to be the more free-spirited. Is that correct?
Well, in Harry, in his name, it's he's going to come into being more of a philanthropist. And as he gets older, he'll become more gracious and he'll be more serving. He'll be more like his mom, mm-hmm. Princess Diana, mm-hmm. you know, and the graciousness and out there caring for the people where... his brother has William has more of the weight of the leadership. But I'll tell you, when he picked his wife, that is such a lovely combination. When you compare those two names, that will be an incredible marriage relationship for their entire lives. And he will do a very good job in leadership.
Did you find it odd? Actually, I'm glad we're talking about Kate because, you know, we all know her as Kate Middleton. I know when I'm on air ever talking about the royals, I can only ever call her Kate Middleton or I'll say, you know, William and Kate. I cannot deal with this Catherine moniker that they've put upon her. So how has that affected her?
Well, Kate is a lot less confrontational than the name Catherine. In Catherine, it's a lot stricter name. It's got very tight boundaries. It would be very hard for her to break out of preconceived ideas. But when we call her Kate, we allow her to be a leader. We allow her to learn and grow as she's going. And we allow her to express herself in a very warm way, in a very friendly way. It's really interesting when you compare Kate's name with William's name because they complement each other. And where one would have a challenge in their name, the other one has that as a strength. So together, they like totally balance each other. And that's why I say it's such a fabulous relationship. I think it's one that's going to last with very few ruffles, you know, all the way through. And it's really nice, too, that together, they're very, very family oriented. And they want to produce heirs that know how to work, but also know how to balance work with play. So it's just a lovely dynamic.
Now, I wanted to get more, I guess, a little bit into musical pop culture, if you will, especially because over the next little while, we're going to see more and more of these two because their new albums are about to come out. And they actually released their singles on the same week, one day apart.
So from Kate to Katy Perry, what can we say about Katy Perry?
She's very independent. She likes to be a leader in a new direction. She loves to play. She's very physical. She's had a lot of influence that says physicality is important and touch is important. And so that you want to appeal to people's emotions while you're still saying very mental and so very conscious of what you're doing. Katy Perry has a name that says, I want to be at the top of my game and I'm going to work hard and I'm a natural leader and I'm going to see that the harder that I work, the more rewards that I get. And yet in her private time, she's all about play and let's go have fun.
And now the next one, I guess, is interesting because her real name is Stephanie Germanotta, but we all know her as Lady Gaga. I think she gets called Gaga by a lot of people. Obviously, that's a name of her choosing that she's sort of embodied. What goes on with her considering she's got like four names going on?
Well, if you look at when people call her Stephanie versus people calling her Lady Gaga, when she's going by her stage name, she's all about changing dynamics, and she works very hard to present a totally different character than who she is when she's in private. So in her private life, she would like to dance. She doesn't really feel like she always fits in, but she would try very hard. She'd be very much attached to her family and the people that she's close to, and she'd pretty much be a quiet soul. And yet when she changes into Lady Gaga, then she's saying, let's change perceptions. Let's keep moving in a direction that enforces us to think differently than how we've been brought up to think or where our culture has taken us before. And she becomes this absolute change agent with a lot of self-confidence and yet incredibly likable. And when she's got her regular name, it's like you could pass her by or miss her or even not notice her because it's very much a contained name and very well just for the friends around her, but she would be a totally different person. It'd be like Jekyll and Hyde and not like good and bad, but just that different one personality from another.
And I sort of, I find that interesting. And does it sort of correlate to a little bit with what goes on with Rihanna? Because her name is Rihanna, but it's Robin Fenty as well, like part of her name. I'm sure she's Robin to her mom and other close family members, but we all know her as Rihanna, which again sounds like such an exotic name kind of in many ways. So does that sort of add to why she's like she does seem herself exotic and sort of flamboyant?
Well, there's a lot of similarities between her stage presence and her home presence. In the name Robin, you have somebody who likes to be the boss, who likes to be in charge and is highly competitive with this fabulous memory and very independent. And yet in her name Rihanna, she's saying, I'm more oriented toward groups. I can get along with groups better than when I can when I'm Robin. And I'm a lot more likable. And yet I'm not going to lose my fabulous memory, my organizational, my search for the truth. And she's put in the difference in her name, Rihanna and Robin. She's given herself a lucky streak, so it doesn't matter what she does, she's going to land on her feet.
What are your thoughts, Sharon, on celebrities? And it seems that this happens more in celebrity land, where they name their children really, you know, out in left field names. For example, Busy Phillips. Obviously, she has her own sort of name going on, but apparently her daughter's name is Birdie Lee Silverstein. And then another one is the son is Cricket Pearl Silverstein. So that's a lot to handle, I would feel.
Well, it lets them be who they want to be without people having a preconceived idea. But again, if you go by the letters and what the letters are sitting next to, because every letter influences the ones around it, you still go by letter to interpret who they are. But when you're given a name like Oprah, that's not a common name, it's like that person has the freedom to be who they are without preconceived ideas. Because when we say a common name like Steve or Steven, we all get a preconceived idea based on all the other Steves and Stevens that we've known. Mm-hmm. And when you have a name that's not common, it's like everybody's open to, okay, who's this person? What's this person like? Like Keanu Reeves is another one. It's like that's not a common name at all. And so everybody's like giving him a chance to say, okay, who is he? And so when a lot of people are giving unique individual names, they're really saying, I want my child to be able to be who they are without other people putting preconceived conceptions on top of them.
Does it ever surprise you, like, because you brought up Oprah, and obviously she has, you know, reached such high levels of fame. Also, Madonna has done extremely well, and that's obviously not a name you hear so often. But then, like, let's say, so, you know, you have these two examples right there who have less common names but have done extremely well. But what happens if you juxtapose them with, like, again, other people who have done extremely well but have, quote-unquote, regular names, like a Janet Jackson? Like, she, you know, everyone, if you say Janet, usually most people assume right away that we're talking about her. She doesn't even need her last name anymore. And even Tina Turner, I know that that's a stage name, the Tina part. But like, that is a regular name, quote unquote, if you will. And she's, you know, ascended to such heights.
Well, with Janet, it's very interesting because she has the J-A in both her first name and her last name. Mm-hmm. And the J's are people who are learning to follow their own lead. Anybody whose first name starts with a J, some of what they're here for is to learn to follow their own lead and not be so influenced by everybody around them, where they can hear the other person, but they've got to follow their own heart. And the A that follows the J says, I'm a workaholic. I can also be a great couch potato. But the J-A says, I have to work extra hard and able to prove to myself that I have self-worth and value. And so she's gotten that both from her family, that they have to work extra hard, everybody in that family, to prove that they have worth and value. And then she's taken it on. And that's also how she feels, that she constantly has to prove herself. And therefore, she works that extra hard. And that's how she's gotten where she's gotten. But you notice everybody in that family has worked very hard to prove who they are. But the rest of them seem to find a place where they go, okay, now I'm good. I'm good with this. But because she's got that J-A in the beginning of her name also, it's like it's a never-ending proof. And that's why she's constantly coming up and trying new things and, again, proving herself to all of us that she's good. And that's why we remember her.
Okay. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is name expert and author of Know the Name, Know the Person, Sharon Lynn Wyeth. You can learn more on her website, knowthename.com. I wanted to ask you as well, you know, about middle names. Like, does that really turn things upside down and affect things as well, Sharon?
Middle names always affect how we react under stress. Now, if somebody does not have a middle name, then that person is the same whether they're stressed or not stressed. But sometimes under stress, we see people fall apart and we go, why are you falling apart? And other times under stress, we see people come out with their very best. And so it depends on what the middle name is, how they're going to respond under stress. And the most interesting thing I've noticed about middle names is when the middle name is stronger or has more dominant characteristics than the first name, those people become procrastinators. It's as if they put themselves under a fake stress or one they didn't need and able to get the best performance out of themselves.
What happens as well if you have someone that has a name or names where there are less common letters, like letters that you don't often use in, I suppose, the English language? Like, let's say there's an X or a Q. Does that add some power or punch or change because those letters aren't used that often?
It's interesting because the letters that are not used as often in the English language, all of those letters, when you interpret them, they're more solid. And what I mean by that is those people are harder to move, budge, influence. Those are people that are more dynamic in knowing exactly what they want and how they want something done. And so they push to go forward. So if you want to help change that person, it takes a lot more effort. For an example, a Z represents my way or the highway.
Okay.
So they want their stuff done that particular way. And if not, get out of their way.
That's interesting because my niece, she is 3 and her name is Alexia Alexander. So as you can imagine, she's got the 2 X's going on. And she reminds me of that. Like she is 3 and you really have to be, she's more difficult to manage than her 5-year-old sister, Eva. You know, they're both great kids, but it's just they have such polar opposite personalities. And Alexia is very fierce. And when she decides that this is what the course she's on, you really have to work at it to change her mind.
Well, the Q, the X, and the Z all hold that in common. that those people are very dynamic in knowing already what is right for them.
Okay. And I actually wanted to ask you about a name like that, like Alexia Alexander, because she's got, you know, the A-L-E-X on both, you know, both startings of names. And like, for example, the American Idol singer Phillip Phillips, like it's almost like they're carrying the same name.
It's as if their support or their environment totally supports who they came to be, that there isn't conflict. There isn't really an outside influence. It's perfect harmony in what they're being given or how they're being reared and who they came to be and what they came to do. It's like absolutely perfect harmony because you don't see any letters in conflict. You see every letter supported.
Oh, that's amazing. That's really cool. And I wanted to ask you as well, Sharon, what is your thoughts on people who, you know that they're going to name their child, let's say, Scott, like that, you know, Scott is the name that they're going to have when that baby boy is born. Does that affect things as well? Because sometimes, like, I always think like you should have two or three names maybe. And then when you see the baby, maybe it looks more like an Adam as opposed to a Scott. Like, or if you are strong with the Scott, do you just go with that regardless?
Well, according to ancient religion, when there were only seven religions on the planet for thousands of years, they had 10 to 12, depending on how you look at it, basic beliefs that were all exactly the same. And one of the core beliefs was that the incoming soul impresses upon the one who's going to be naming them what they want to be called. So if that's the case, whenever that parent gets that impression, why would they consider other names? Because now they've received what that child wants to be called, and that's why they become strong in that one name.
And is there any parting advice that you would, you know, want to share with the listeners at all when it comes to naming names or even just, you know, thoughts or because it's funny, like I have a couple of people in my life who are teachers and they have such a hard time when they had their children because there's just certain names that are completely off the table because of, you know, quote unquote, some terrible child they've had.
As a teacher, I understand that every name has challenges and every name has gifts. And I always look at a balanced name as a name that their challenges can be overcome because of the gifts that also lay in the name. And as a teacher, when I came to naming mine, both of my kids impressed upon me what they wanted to be called. But when we were looking at names earlier, I said, you know, these kids have these certain challenges and everybody's going to feel differently because what could be a challenge to one is a gift to another. It's just kind of like what's trash to one is a gift to another. You know, what somebody wants to discard, another person says, oh, I love that. Thank you very much. So I always think when you take a name, if you just realize that we're all doing the best we can with what we know, and if we can accept a person for that and not judge them, then we can all learn to get along. And within a name is the secrets on how to get along with that person. And they're literally putting it out there in their name. And what I've noticed for people that I've taught nameology with is they start appreciating everybody around them so much more because you can see the whole person and what their gifts are and where their challenges are. And so it's no longer a competition. And it seems to open people's hearts to really appreciate the people around them. So I wish we could do that without even knowing the names, because that way the world would be a better place.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Sharon. We really appreciate it.
Always my pleasure, Kelly.
That was name expert and author Sharon Lynn Wyeth. Again, for more information on names or to purchase her book, you can check out her website, knowthename.com.
Capture your need for sound.
Every few months, we're being introduced to new ways of consuming the music, movies, and TV that we enjoy. It's getting less tactile and more virtual all the time. But is it really what we want? Joining us to talk about all of this is our social media expert, Patrick Charles. Patrick, hello.
How you doing?
Good, good. So I actually thought it was interesting when you brought this topic to me because I am still one of those people that enjoy touching a CD.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I understand that. We talk about that often. I mean, a lot of people do.
Yeah. So I can, but I also like, you know, I'm pretty much always mesmerized by my iPhone. Like I think it's, you know, fantastic and it does so many great things. So I get the virtual side of things too, but it's weird. Like some things I have no problem, you know, cutting down on. For example, like some of the scripts that I have to do for radio stuff, you know, I used to print them out all the time and now I'll write them on my iPad or something. And then, you know, so I'm saving down on the tree cutting.
Absolutely.
But then other times, if it's something like, you know, again, some script stuff that I really need to make sure I'm up to date with and it need to be solid with, I will print that sheet out. Like, and I feel better having it in my hands. Am I weird? I don't know.
No, I just like that you said sheet.
Yeah.
That was cool. You will print that sheet out.
Exactly. So I'm not the only one, is what you're telling me.
No, you're not. A lot of people still feel that way. And it's nothing to do with age, because I mean, it's something that if people weren't really interested in having stuff in their hands, it would have disappeared a long time ago. Like, we all know about the myth of the paperless office, right?
Right. Yeah.
We used to hear about that, I don't know, what, 20 years ago? People used to say, oh, eventually you'll have a paperless office. It'll be fantastic. The fact of the matter is, humans still like to hold stuff and touch stuff.
Yep.
So the idea of just having a chip implanted in your brain and being able to do everything isn't really that appealing, because I think humans will always like to touch things. Right. So, you know, what's happening now is like you said, you still like your CDs, and I'm just waiting for the resurgence, because the crazy thing is, I mean, look, we have Record Store Day.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Every year, vinyl sales have like steadily been, I don't really want to say climbing to make it sound as if it's going to be a comeback, but it's not going to disappear.
Right.
Considering how long ago vinyl was phased out, you would think that it would be completely gone by now. And if mm-hmm. you saw a record, it would only be at a garage sale. But the fact of the matter is, that's kind of a niche-y kind of boutique thing now to have a record player and some vinyl. Now, we also had this year for the first time Cassette Day.
Yes.
Yes.
And you know that we love cassettes here on the show, so
yeah. Well, there's some independent record labels that that are producing their artist albums on cassette. I mean, it's a novelty thing. Obviously, they're not thinking this is going to make a huge comeback. A lot of people do still like it, and they like to pop in a tape. And I think for people who never did that before, it's becoming something, you know, something kind of cool.
Do you think though, like for example, you and I both know that tape hiss is like its own, you know, it's like the seventh instrument to your band, really.
It is, absolutely.
So, but like, you know, let's say we've got a 13-year-old that's never really had to deal with this. Would they think we're lame, you know, that it's, because I still have my mixtapes from the 90s, so.
Yeah, well, you would think so, because, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. I have a friend who has an HDTV and a non-HDTV, and his son's about 8, and he usually watches the HDTV, mm-hmm. which was out for repairs, and he was watching the regular TV, and his son said, Dad, there's something wrong with the television. It looks all old-timey. Non-HD looks old-timey. So nice. I would assume the same thing can be said of tape hiss. However, look how many videos sound horrible on YouTube.
Right.
So maybe it's not that crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, is the cassette the latest technology that is making a comeback, or is it the vinyl?
Well, I'd say the latest, it would be the cassette for sure. But I mean, it just seems to be one of those novelty things that people forgot about cassettes for a long time. And now it just seems interesting again. So cassette production is being ramped up over the last few months.
And what, I guess, like, is there a way of looking at this as consumers? Like you said it yourself before that, you know, vinyl sales are not going to take the world by storm. But is it showing like a shift into nostalgia? Like, I don't know.
Well, I think it's a shift into nostalgia, and I think that the good thing about it is, you know, people talk about nobody paying for downloads. It's like you can't, you know, steal a record as easily as you can actually steal a download. So maybe it's a good thing that we can actually, you know, go into a store and buy these tangible things again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know, like, and you and I have discussed this in the past, like, I don't feel, you know, as long as they keep pumping them out, as long as Janet Jackson has an album, like, I will go get it. Like, whether it's on CD or vinyl. And there's certain artists, even, you know, now that I think I would always want, like, I'm a fan of Janelle Monáe, and I feel like I would want her CD. And it was funny, I interviewed a singer-songwriter, Tom O'Dell. He's going to be on the show soon. And I don't know if you've seen his CD, but
no, I haven't.
It was interesting to see that his notes, like his liner notes, if you will, or the CD booklet, I guess is what I'm trying to say, is it was photocopies of his actual notebook where he wrote the songs for the first time.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
And I actually asked him about it, and he's going to talk about it on the show. But it was really just sort of cool to see, hey, like this kid who's like, I think he's 23, you know, he felt that his CD booklet should encompass and just show the work that went into, you know, writing, because it's all scribbles and, you know, and there's line crossing out stuff. And I just thought it was really cool. And then he had his liner notes at the end, you know, thanking his parents and all that kind of stuff. So it was just interesting, though, to see someone who's in their early 20s go, hey, like this, I still use paper and pen.
That is very cool, though. That is a very interesting thing. And I don't know. I mean, can it ever really, truly disappear? Right. I don't think it can.
I still love a stationery store, Patrick. I'm not going to lie. It was funny because I had this conversation with our music editor, Sharon Hyland, how the two of us like get a buzz like at the stationery store. It's like thrilling, even though none, like her and I are not in school anymore. Like I like to go buy a nice notebook every now and then.
That's and really some pens. Funny.
Like, do you have that? Or do you, I mean, I know you're a guy, so maybe it's different, but.
No, and I used to. Well, here's the thing. I used to have notebooks all the time. I'd always buy a cool one, but I've completely switched everything to digital. I have nothing written
down.
Really,
eh?
At all.
Would you get like a hand cramp if you had to put 5 good minutes in of writing then?
I don't even know if I'd remember how, to be quite honest. I really don't.
Gotcha.
And in fact, I'll tell you something funny. I'm actually left-handed, and if I mime writing, I now mime writing with my right hand.
Really?
Yeah, because it doesn't mean anything to me.
Right.
It doesn't mean anything to me at all. So if I you know, sort of mime to you like, oh, I'll, you know, write it down, I'll do it with my right hand rather than my left. Simply because my phone is on my left.
Oh, maybe. That could be it. I have to say, though, that's slightly creepy because I'm also left-handed. So that's the one good thing is I don't get binder bruises anymore.
Yeah, right.
You know, we don't have that. Before I let you bounce, though, I wanted to ask you, is the industry in general noticing the fact that people still want to have things in their hands? Is that why the cassettes are coming back?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, like I said, I mean, you have to actually pay for stuff that's physical, right?
Right.
Like they know that it's not quite as easy to steal a stack of records. So I think that the industry, if they see any sort of a trend for physical objects again, you know, like cassettes or vinyl, I think they'll be more than happy to ramp up the production. But I'll tell you about a patent that Apple actually applied for just recently, just a few days ago. And it's a patent for digital signatures.
Really?
Yeah, almost like a PDF of a signature. So like what people are speculating they're going to do is you'll be able to get an autograph with an album that you download.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And actually, I wanted to ask you something, and I'm going to look like a big nerd here, I guess, or a loser, one of the two, in the fact that I have yet to buy a full album online. Like, if I do get a song, it's usually like I just get the single. Because again, I'm that person where if I want like the Justin Timberlake album, I'm going to go get it and actually
right.
have it. Or I'm fortunate at work that some of the albums that I do want, you know, the record labels will sort of pass it along. So I've been fortunate. I haven't really had to go, you know, purchase too many CDs, but I will. Like, I'll still go get like a George Michael, you know, this, that, or whatever else. But all that to say is like, when you do buy a full album, do you get the credits? Like, do you see this digitally? Like,
yeah, you can actually get like a PDF with it. They give you the liner notes and everything, and you can look at them on your computer,
okay.
Which is, you know, kind of a weird thing. Cause it seems like it's going in two opposite directions, right? It's like on one hand, they're saying this is really a modern way to listen to your album.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, you're looking at a picture of what used to come inside of a CD.
Right.
Which seems weird.
I
right?
really love my CD booklets. I have to tell you, Patrick, like I did, even just the other day, I was sort of backtracking as we've discussed about how I'm on this kick of listening to CDs fully in my car. And so
right.
I picked out the Janet Jackson, Demita Joe album from 2004. And I hadn't actually listened to it in a while. And it was just so cool to pull out the booklet and actually read her liner notes from when she was still with Jermaine Dupri. Like it was
oh,
funny,
right, yeah.
you know, because now she's married to this billionaire Qatari businessman. And it's funny to see her talking in liner notes about her baby Jermaine.
Like, that's crazy.
So that's why I think liner notes are still important, Patrick.
I think they are, but I think a lot of people put that information on their websites now. So
yeah,
that's
maybe
what you have
you're
to
right.
do, you know?
Okay. Well, I'll try to get there, but I feel like I'm on the fence. Like I'm battling the two parts of myself to go virtual and to still have something in my hands. So thank you so much for all of this. It's great.
Thank you. We'll speak to you soon.
That is our social media expert, Patrick Charles. Follow him on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com, and also on Twitter at GetPatrick. A big thank you going out to my guests this week, the amazing and incredible Pointer Sisters, Sharon Lynn Wyeth, as well as Patrick Charles. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Steve Maraboli. It's time to care. It's time to take responsibility. It's time to lead. It's time for a change. It's time to be true to our greatest self. It's time to stop blaming others. Thank you as always for hanging out on the show. Don't forget to check out all of our social media, especially on YouTube with all of our celebrity interviews and other interviews up there as well. YouTube.com/KellyAlexanderShow. Also on Twitter at KAlexanderShow and on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show. Have an awesome week. Any comments or questions? Kelly@KellyAlexanderShow.com. You and I'll chat soon.